You are listening to Resonance FM. One of 4.4 London. Resonance FM, London's first radio art station.
Welcome to The Bike Show on Resonance FM with me, Jack Thurston. At the end of last month, one of the grandest and biggest of London's museums, the Victoria and Albert Museum, devoted its monthly Friday late evening opening to the subject of bikes. It was a great evening with all kinds of bikey things going on amongst the usual V&A exhibits. And upstairs in the rather impressive National Art Library, there was a pair of talks. I hosted one session on the secret history of bicycle cultures, and there'll be more about that later in the season. And the other was hosted by Alice Marsh, looking at art and design and the bicycle. Alice had put together a varied panel of bicycle and graphic designers, and what follows is an abridged recording of their hour-long discussion. Enough from me, over to the V&A and Alice Marsh.
We really wanted to just chat about tonight as part of the lovely evening here at the V&A is the world that surrounds bikes and the beautiful and quite actually unnecessary probably world that surrounds bikes. So if you think about a bike, it's a very, very simple design. It's their mode of transport, but for some reason there is a culture around it, painting them beautiful colours with intensely beautiful head badges. There are magazines, prints, artwork surrounding bikes. So I'm joined today by a fantastic panel, and we're just going to talk about everything that we like that surrounds bikes. If you want to ask any of us a question, then please feel free at any time. So I will let the panel introduce themselves now.
Hi there, I'm Tom Donohue from Donohue Bicycles. I'm a custom frame builder and painter, building bespoke frames and bicycles for people.
I'm Mike White. I'm the editor of Boneshaker magazine, which is a quarterly publication that celebrates bicycles and the people that ride them.
I'm Andrew Diprose, and I'm the art director of the Ride Journal. My brother, the editor, is sitting in the front row, so if I say anything out of line, he'll have his hand up. Yeah, we do this as a passion project. Yeah, just celebrating, you know, bikes and people who ride them and telling their stories through words, illustration and photography. And when I'm not doing that, I'm art director of Wired magazine as well in the UK.
Hi, folks. My name's James Gregg. I'm a graphic designer and I run a blog called Cycle Love, which is a celebration of bike culture from the angle of people on bikes, not cyclists, because I hate that word. But we can talk about that later, maybe.
Okay, so where I was going to kind of start off really was with the actual bikes themselves. If you were to actually take apart a bicycle, lay it down flat, it's actually a tiny area, but yet within this area, there is an amazing range of possibilities to express yourself as a rider or as a designer, from the head badges to the paint jobs, and also just covering it in your favourite stickers. So, first of all, I just wanted to have a quick chat with Tom about when you design a bike for somebody, the process of talking to that person and deciding what colour it is and how much that means to you and the process that kind of goes into that.
Just to start with the process of having a bicycle built by a custom builder, it kind of just starts with a conversation. They'd approach me and say, oh, I want this bike to do this and that, and or I do this and that. What do I need? What do I want? It's a funny one because sometimes you have to read a bit between the lines as to what is the best thing for them. It's nice when you get a blank canvas. I prefer to work with my customers. It's sort of to include them in the design process as much as they want to be included in that process. Some of them really, really love it to the point where I spend far too long emailing them. And other times, they're happy just to let me get on.
So I'm going to kind of really touch on quite quickly a bit of the branding involved in this. So your branding is to Swallows?
Yeah,
which I'll click on in a second. But what made you choose that, and why with different frames is it slightly different? And
okay, cool. Basically the Swallows thing came about, or the Donhu logo came about. The whole Donhu thing, me building frames, everything came about when I was on a cycle trip from I rode from Mongolia down to Singapore, through across the Gobi Desert, all down through China and Southeast Asia. And this is basically, Donhu Bikes is kind of what I dreamt up as I was going. I used to work as a product designer, and kind of my heart wasn't in it anymore. So I wanted to figure out what to do for myself, and it ended up being this. And the Donhu logo, the actual type logo, came from when I was riding through sort of Vietnam and places like that. There was a lot of these trucks called Hino trucks, and I think they were Japanese imported trucks, and they were cutting me up all the time and dropping their loads on me and all sorts of stuff. And the actual Donhu type logo is inspired by the Hino logo, which I was looking at sort of every day. And then the Swallows thing, you know, I'd been away for 9 months on my own, sort of sleeping rough at the side of the road pretty much. And putting the Swallows on, obviously you're probably aware there's so much symbolism attached with Swallows for different things, but it's actually one of those is sort of a safe homecoming. The Swallows are the bird that flies the furthest out to sea, so a sailor, that's the first bird a sailor will see, and then know they're close to home when they see that. So it's just, you know, it's a kind of nice thing to fly on the front of a frame.
You're of the kind of new wave of frame builders, and that's very much tied in with artistry and the craftsmanship and stuff. So did you want it to have that connotations of craftsmanship and tradition? And
yeah, totally. I mean, what I do is a craft, you know, it's a fine craft. So you do kind of want to give a nod to the sort of, you know, what you've grown up with. It's just a symbol of speed and sort of swiftness in a way. I think that's probably the reason why the birds are used most commonly.
It is an odd relationship with brands and cycling, as I've made abundantly clear on many occasions. I have quite a kind of issue with it, really. And I think it's that this whole world of cycling culture is exploding at the moment, but yet the industry is still quite set in its ways. Like, I was actually talking about different magazines, and I've got the Cyclist here, which is a new magazine. Sorry if there's anyone from the Cyclist here. It's a very old school bike magazine. It really kind of focuses on the traditional sport aspect of it. There's articles, I mean, the photography's amazing, but there's lots of articles about nutrition, and then some very kind of product heavy reviews. And Bone Shaker and the Ride aren't like that at all, really.
Well, hearing that a second ago, we really are, you know, everybody here is going to be really aware, we really are the left of the left field in the bike world. And, like, you know, there's a big, shiny, brilliant part of the bike industry that is commercial. It's a business. People are making money. People are riding bikes. If there's somebody sitting on a saddle, I'm happy about it. You know, Phil and I get, I don't know, 5 bike magazines a month. Some of them have got nutrition. Some of them have got products. Some of them have got, I like all of that kind of stuff. And I really like, you know, something for everybody. And that's a great thing about bikes. And that inclusive thing is something that we do in a very small part. You know, we'll buy a bike magazine that's a mountain bike magazine. We're into mountain bike. We'll buy a road bike magazine. We're into road riding. We'll buy, you know, whatever. And we like all that kind of riding. But at the time when the journal came out, there wasn't really anybody, maybe other than like Dirt Rag or something, that was doing all kinds of riding in the same publication, you know, that would tell stories of somebody, say, commuting in Alaska next to, you know, Bradley Wiggins or Jens Voigt or somebody like that. You know, it's just really democratic. And, you know, I'm just happy that the journal's in the mix next to all those other magazines. Like, I don't really hate on the other magazines. I buy them, but it's just a very different thing. You just got to pick what's for you.
Yeah, I totally agree. For us, we felt there was a huge human side to cycling. So many stories, particularly, I don't really like the word inspirational, but stories about the way that bicycles can improve your life on a very close personal level and on a huge democratic political level. The way that they can be a tool for social and political change, the way that they can empower communities, all of these things are stories with a bicycle somewhere in the picture, but they're not really stories about cycling per se. They're not just about a sport or a transport option. It's a much bigger picture than that. And whilst, like Andrew, I can appreciate the kind of glossier, more cataloguey magazines, we felt there was room for more of those stories to be told. So that's what we try and do with Bike Shaker.
Because this brings me on to the subject of bike art, which, and a lot of the kind of visual world that surrounds cycling, which I just can't help thinking sometimes. I mean, I love it, don't get me wrong, and I'm the biggest consumer of it. But every now and again, especially when I'm talking to somebody that doesn't cycle, it does just sound a bit obsessive and a bit weird that we cycle. Okay, great. We enjoy it as a sport. We enjoy getting from A to B. But then why do we spend our time then looking at bike blogs and a lot of bike porn, if we're honest, then spending the rest of the time looking at bike magazines, then buying pictures of bikes to hang on our wall, and even buying silk scarves with bikes on. And
you could go on. I think, like, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are going to agree with this. If you love bikes, you really love bikes, and there are always going to be people on a sliding scale of, like, you know, they get on their bike to work, they don't call themselves a cyclist, they just ride to work. Fine, that's one thing. You get another layer, and the deeper you get into a niche, the more enthusiastic and the more crazy the you know, fans get. And I, you know, I'm sure I'm not alone in wanting to see bikes in everything, you know. The park toilet roll holder, actually. Yeah, I haven't got one of those anymore, but
pizza cutter as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I haven't got the pizza cutter, but I've got the beer opener. But, you know, you just want to surround yourself, and it's like anything. The deeper you get into something, you know, the more enthusiastic people get, and they want to surround themselves with all kinds of bikey stuff.
People just like to obsess about stuff, don't they? It could be coffee or furniture or shoes or anything. I don't think bikes are necessarily unique in that regard. But there is something extra that comes for those that are fully converted and evangelical. The way that they feel that bicycles have improved their lives is something that just has to be shared. And that's where the kind of visual expressions of being into cycling come out. Like, I like the fact that my belt was made from an old tyre. And I know that other people who are into bikes will notice that and know that I like them too. And I don't know why that pleases me, but it does. And so you see lots of people, like, you know, with the trousers that have
reflective
turn.
I feel like such a victim.
That.
No, it's true. Like, I'm like a pastiche of
and
myself.
And I look at that and it makes me smile to know that.
You know, every other rider will ride down the road and they'll be like, oh, like, I don't know, please tell me I'm not the only one. And you look at what somebody's wearing and oh God, I am the only one. And, like, and you look at what shoes they're riding in,
yeah,
and then
completely.
You know how serious they are or what they're riding in. And that, you know,
yeah,
it's a thing. And it's not even a fashion thing. It's just like a day-to-day thing. Like, how often do you ride your bike? What kind of shoes do you want to ride in? How good is your jacket? You know, what kind of helmet you're riding in? Are you riding in a helmet? That kind
they're
of thing.
Tribal identifiers, aren't they?
Yeah. And I think, you know, the stickers and your bike itself is a huge part of that as well. Because I will get caught checking people's bikes out at the traffic light. And there is that thing where you see a couple of stickers and like, they're all right. Yeah, kind of thing. And it is a bit of a kind of silly thing that can be taken a bit too far, maybe.
Hi, this is a question for both Bone Shaker and The Ride. I mean, we were talking about photography earlier, but both magazines use really a lot of illustration. And for me, that's one of the things that really enhances the content for both titles and really sort of sets them apart from a lot of other cycling magazines. So I was wondering whether for both of you that was something that when you started the magazines, was it a conscious decision that you would rely more on illustration to kind of convey something about the text than than you would necessarily photography?
It was for us, partly because illustration, I think, can offer a softer, more intimate, more personal take on the words. And we felt that there was, to a certain extent, in a lot of the more commercial cycling magazines, there was what my wife calls preposterone, this kind of unduly competitive, masculine, overly serious, hard-nosed kind of... suffering.
Suffering, that, endurance. That
endurance and everything having to be lighter and faster and this kind of puffed-up, hard male thing. I'm not saying that illustrators are soft or that illustration is any way a sign is in any way bad, but it can soften and bring a more thoughtful, creative feel to the publication, we hope, anyway. So and also we enjoy working with illustrators, and where it works, once we've featured an illustration in the magazine, we often then produce a run of prints of something that they've done, and then we can offer that on the web shop, plug, to kind of help them and help us and enhance the offering that we present.
I think there's an ambiguity to illustration that there isn't with photography. You know, if you've got a piece of, you know, that somebody's saying, I went on this ride and I did this, you see a photograph, you know, you're naturally going to, you know, you're going to make the connection. Oh, that's what the rider in the story is doing. That's the lane they're riding down, looks like that, or that's the mountain, looks like that. With an illustration, generally, it's a little bit more kind of impressionistic, and that suits people for the kind of reading that they do in the journal, that they can read a story and they can imagine how it is in their head, and they've got it backed up with something as part of an illustration. They can draw from it what they want, whereas if there was a photograph, it's just very, very literal. Generally, the written pieces are illustrated, with artwork, and the photo stories stand alone and tell their own story, and they are photographic. I think that's kind of the division, but it's quite interesting that you say there's a lot of suffering in cycling. I think I never really thought of it like that, but like to have a very serious and grimacy face means you're riding hard and you're cool, and to smile means you are like a leisure rider, basically. And that's a bit of a pity, but I guess that's the kind of language that people have for advertising.
Cycling and art and all of these types of things are very new and fresh. Where do you see this all going in the future?
I don't know how it's happened, but everybody's reporting now that cycling has become cool, and like, I don't want to be the man who said I was before it was cool, but it was like pretty uncool only a few years ago. And I think a lot of the people and a lot of the interest that's happened now, I don't want to see it wane, but it will do. And the people who are into it because they think it looks cool and it makes them look cool will disappear again. And the people who are really into it in a few years will still be riding their bikes. Phil and I are always saying, I want to be that like 90-year-old bent over dude who's like in the baggy woolen leggings. I aspire to be that man. And, a lot of the artwork and the stuff to do with it, I think, is, people are interested because they're interested in bikes, and bikes are cool, and bikes and design kind of run along, comfortably with each other. But I don't know, people like Tom, I hope in years to come, he'll still be making bikes because he loves bikes. Like, he's not doing it because he thinks it's cool, he's going to make a little bit of money now. People who are in this for the long term are hopefully going to... God, that sounds really self-righteous, but you know your kind of thing.
I think also hopefully cool can be a gateway kind of thing to if people get into cycling because it's cool, they then may continue to enjoy it because it's actually also
that would be great.
Really,
that's what
really
we all
great
hope.
And
yeah.
Fun and useful, and it's brings freedom to your life and all these other things that happen to be cool but maybe weren't the reason why they started. I hope. That the fixie scene is huge at the moment, and I think that's fabulous. But there are, I know of people personally who had never ridden a bike since they were sort of six, and then bought a fixie because it was cool, and that coolness has been a gateway, and they've now also gone out and bought a couple of other bikes, like one with gears and one for touring, and they're kind of into bikes now, and it doesn't really matter.
I think we hear that a lot, especially people. people who, yeah, maybe who got into it through that route or another route and have now discovered other facets of cycling that, you know, previously they wouldn't have been interested in. George, who's at the back, we're talking with him earlier about the idea of people, you know, aging BMXers who like will now pick up a road bike, and I'm hoping that, you know, the kind of the prejudice that people had years ago, you know, mountain bikers would never say, well, nobody still says, roadies still don't say hello to mountain bikers, but that's another story. But, you know, the people will find one kind of riding that they're into, and it'll be a gateway to all kinds of other riding that will hopefully take them through their cycling life.
I get a lot of people now that have sort of brought into cycling through, you know, wanting the sort of top-end carbon road bike, and thinking that that's what they need, the sort of lightest thing going, and then realise after a year sort of being on that that, you know, maybe there's a better option. So I see a lot of people that they sort of phone me up and be like, oh, you know, I've been riding this carbon thing for a while now, and I think maybe I need a steel bike. So I get a lot of sort of people converting from, you know, the sort of that kind of high pricey sort of end of the road spectrum. But I do also get a lot of the kind of the fixed gear guys that want gears and tourers. I see that as well. I think it's great. I think basically, you know, a lot of more people have picked up bikes, and hopefully a lot more people will keep picking up bikes because of that rather than putting them back down again.
And I think in terms of, you were talking about the future of cycling and art, I think there's an increasing awareness that the bicycles can fit into your sort of aesthetic world as well, without wanting to sound unduly pretentious, but in the way that maybe a couple of hundred years ago someone who liked horses would have a portrait of the horse, and people who like horses today often wear kind of horsey clothes because they like to be identified as a sort of person who rides horses. And I think there's something about bicycles that's becoming more assimilated into that sort of mindset, so now it's quite normal to have for certain kind of people to have a portrait of a bicycle on the wall or pictures of, you know, bike art, and to be wearing cycly kinds of clothes because you want to be identified like that, sort of parallel to the horsey person, but very different.
When Alice said she was going to do this thing, I was kind of like, I've been racking my brains to think why, I don't know how many how many people are graphic designers or illustrators or whatever here? Not really many, few, okay, quite a few. I was trying to think of why there was such a strong link between graphic design and bikes. And I saw a shop window on the way here today, and it had that kind of shop window philosophy thing. And it said, design is where science and art break even. And I think that is exactly where bikes are. So, you know, I'm not surprised that there's that kind of parallel. You know, it's not just art, because it's got to be practical, it's got to fit it's got to fit a body, it's got to be affordable, it's got to be buildable. But yeah, that kind of art and design thing, you know, really, 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 you know, I identify with that as a graphic designer, because it really is like the practical side. It's the practical side of art, or the arty side of science.
It's that endless kind of tinkering that you can do with your bike. And I think everybody who's ridden a bike for a while is always in the back of their head thinking about the next part they're going to get, thinking about how they can do it up a little bit more, thinking about, oh, maybe a different colour saddle would look really, really good, and maybe their dream bike, which is always being planned in their head. And I think that's one of the amazing things about cycling, is that it is very, very inclusive. In a way now that it didn't used to be in the past. So we were talking about the old magazines and the very kind of male macho image that it had before. And I think now, if you feel that through bike art and through getting involved in what colour it's going to be and that process, that you feel a kind of ownership and you can get involved, and it's less scary for a lot of people too.
I think a push bike is really accessible for people to customise. It's pretty clean, you can do it in your front room. Parts are cheap, you only really need a few tools to do it. I think that's a lot of reason why people, you know, can get creative with a bike. To do it with a motorbike or with a car is a lot more involved, it's a lot more dirty. So I think that's why a lot of people, you know, tend to want to customise their bike, just because you can, it's fun, it's not that serious. You don't have to get engine hoist to pull engines out of cars and stuff like that. I think there's a lot of that involved with people wanting to customise bikes.
And we were talking about this a little bit earlier, but are there any rules? So we were talking about, you know, I was saying that actually when it comes to the look of your bike, you can stick as many stickers on it as you like. You can make it look ratty. You can do whatever paint job. But do you think there are actually some rules? Are there some graphic design rules to your bike?
I think there are tons of rules, but they're only rules that are personal rules, that, you know, depending on the kind of riding or whatever. Like, I don't rock a tassel off the end of the handlebar, but for somebody, that's a really cool thing. My daughter, I'm hoping she's going to rock a tassel. You know, yeah, everybody has rules, but, you know, I think it's cool if people keep those to themselves.
Absolutely. My son does rock the tassels. Yeah. He's only four. It's fine. But someone bought me some Spokey Dokies.
I quite like a Spokey Dokie.
Yeah, I fond memories, you know, nostalgia streamed back when I saw them. But I just, God, I couldn't, not on the touring bike, you know, not on the road bike, not on the polo bike. There was nowhere I could put them. It wasn't right, so...
Is there a concern to you that you'll build something beautiful and you'll do some lovely, brilliant paint job and you'll see the bike in like a year's time and somebody has done something really nasty to it?
I've not really thought about it. Possibly. I don't know. It's, you know, when you hand a bike over, it's kind of an extension of them. So I think it's kind of free reign, really, if they want to customise it in any way. I was just going to say there's a few things that you shouldn't do if you want people to, if you don't want haters to diss your bikes on the internet. And that's one of the main things is don't put too many headset spaces on a bike. Because when you're building the bike, sometimes the customer asks you to leave a lot of steerer before you cut it down. So they want you to give it to them with a lot of steerer. So you have to put headset spaces on top. And then as soon as the people on the internet see it, man.
They get strangely enraged, don't they? Yeah.
So any others? That's the only rule?
I think that's the big one.
That's the big one.
That's the main one, headset spaces.
Slack chains as well, if you've got a fixie.
Yeah, slack chains on fixies. Oh. Pictures. If you get
but that's
bike.
Quite technical, though.
No, I'm not even going to say odd or even dry chain. That's bad. All right, that's bad, but whatever, if you're going to do that. I'm saying people who run a freewheel but only a front brake.
Yeah, that's a bad one.
Aesthetically speaking, I mean, you get people who say, we'll tape their bike, the entire frame, to make it look as shit as possible, so I don't want to get it stolen. And then you'll have other people who will kind of put padding on the frame because they don't want to get a tiny dink in it when they lock it up. So I think if you ride around London with your eyes open, you'll see the full spectrum, and most people don't really care about the rules.
The squeaky chain thing is, if I had to make a rule, it would probably be that. I carry, you know, the company Green Oil that do like eco-friendly bike oil. They do Green Oil on tour, which comes in a tiny little bottle, and I keep one of those in my bag now. And if I see an orange chain, I'm just like,
a vigilante.
You should come and all my
bike maintenance.
Yeah, you know, yeah. It just makes me feel better inside.
Well, thank you very much then. And I hope you enjoyed our little panel discussion. Everybody here is pretty much agreed that there's an amazing world of stuff out there. And at the moment, we are really seeing an explosion in this bike culture. And we're all very, very, very pleased to have been asked to come along to the V&A tonight. And as I'm sure you can hear, the Flatlanders are officially killing it outside. So please do have a wander around and enjoy the rest of the evening. So thank you very much for coming along.
That was Alice Marsh of Bike V Design, with Andrew Diprose of the Ride Journal, James Grieg of Cycle Love, frame builder Tom Donohue, and Mike White from Boneshaker magazine. You've been listening to The Bike Show here on Resonance FM. I'm Jack Thurston, and until the same time next week, goodbye.